You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome to New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580 every Thursday at this time with the gang from Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It is great to be here. Thank you, Ron. On Thursday, December 8th, 2022, thank you for those who are listening. We're going to be talking about big tax breaks for 22. This is an article done in the Wall Street Journal. We were supposed to do this last week, but it got broomed because of a better article that Heidi had, actually, and she wasn't able to make it. So I stole that article, but she's got her own. She's got her own very good article this week about recession. So before we get to that, before the break, tax breaks for 22, the first thing you want to remember is that most tax breaks that you want to take must be taken before January 1st. Of 23, unless we're talking about contributions to IRAs, Roth IRAs, or health savings accounts. Those can be made until the tax filing deadline in 23, which is what date? Any ideas?
It used to be the 15th.
For a while, it hasn't been the 15th.
It's so passe anymore. So, I don't know. What
it's around the 15th.
Yeah. Yeah, it's April 18th. 18th next year is the tax filing deadline. Now, some self-employed taxpayers can make 22 contributions to solo 401ks and other specialized retirement plans until the date that they actually file their taxes and extensions, which can last until October 16th. Of 23. So keep that in mind for those self-employed who want a deduction still for 22. In some cases, it could make sense for you to still get that deduction because you filed your taxes late. Cash flow issues, perhaps you still want to make that contribution and get a deduction for having done it. Keep in mind that not everybody has to do that by April 18th. If you're self-employed and or a specialized professional.
Okay. So an extension, you still have to send money in, but you don't have to send the paperwork until October, right?
Well, you don't have to send your money in.
Ah.
So if you haven't filed your taxes, now let's be clear, you want to make certain that you've paid at least 90% of your tax, because those that haven't, penalties can be pretty significant. But you don't have to make your retirement plan contribution. In some cases, for specialized retirement accounts when you're self-employed and or perhaps even otherwise, until the date that you actually file your taxes, which can be until October 16th of 23.
But your most common plans, like 401ks, is quite a popular way people save for retirement. That's on a calendar basis.
That is on a calendar basis. So if you're putting money into your 401k as a participant, unfortunately for you, in this case, you got to have it done by 12/31, we'll just say, of 22. So keep in mind, there may be a few more payroll situations for you where you can actually increase your deductible amounts by increasing the amount that you have withheld from your pay. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can take advantage of that, so it's important. Now, the biggest thing that I thought that was a part of this article, I thought was the most important part of this article, was strategizing charitable donations. Charitable donations can be deductible up to the extent that all of your deductions exceed the standard deduction. As a couple, that amount is almost $26,000, $25,900. Well, when would that be the case? If your charitable deductions in mortgage interest, for instance, are greater than that amount, sometimes you can bunch those together from 2 years into one, perhaps. you may want to do that to exceed the standard deduction. The standard deduction is very high right now. At almost $26,000 for a couple, that's huge. So that's a nice tax break. Yeah. So keep that in mind in terms of Roth conversions. It's interesting. I had a phone call yesterday from a local accountant, and he said, Dennis, every time you mention Roth conversions, he says, seriously, I get 5 to 10 calls from clients asking about the Roth conversion. And I thought, well, that's fantastic. But, yeah, you know, it's not always fantastic for those who are trying to figure it and help you with that. So the point is, if you will, try to get this done earlier, mm-hmm, because the professionals in our lives are only getting busier. And I'm seeing this across, yeah, the board. Staffing issues, and then companies that we're working with are, mm-hmm, slowing. Mm-hmm. It's we're having to allow 2 weeks longer for some processing with the firms that we work with as well, just up close and personal.
Yeah, just the sheer volume of people waiting and to make these decisions at the end of the year. Yes. So you really want to check out and see, can it be accomplished at your particular custodian?
Yes. So yesterday I had a conversation with a client. I said, now I think we can get this Roth conversion done, but I cannot promise that it will. I think it'll be processed properly. So obviously, you know, we're in December 8th, and some companies, piece of cake, others, not so sure. So just be aware, you're right at the end here of considering a Roth conversion for many of those companies out there and or your advisors. But anyway, thinking about the standard deduction versus itemizing, perhaps that's a conversation you can have with your tax advisor right now. Are there any things that I could consider as a part of my tax situation before year end? I've got a whole 3 weeks. What could I possibly do, perhaps, to get a better deduction than where I am with a standard deduction at this point? And it may be charitable contributions you've made. It may be, possibly bunching those deductions, not even between this year, but possibly with next year and 24. Given deductions and or financial situations that you think or are relatively certain may be occurring in 23. So that's where, you know, you can really make a difference in terms of year-end planning on the tax side.
Do you know offhand, I know you're not the tax attorney, Mr. Sluice is not here, but offhand, yeah, healthcare costs at a certain level become deductible, do you know?
Yes, healthcare costs to the extent that they exceed, I think it's 7%.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I wrote that down, made a copy of it. Yeah, 7.5%. To the extent that it exceeds 7.5% of adjusted gross income, it is deductible. Okay, I'm sorry. As many filers don't have expenses greater than the 7.5% income threshold, for those who do their service must be completed in the year of the deduction. Yes. So it is in my own notes. I just hadn't noticed it right there. Okay. So it's important to keep this in mind. You know, what are my deductions? Could I include 2 gifts to my charity, either this or for this year and for next, to get the full deduction this year to the extent that it could exceed my standard deduction? All right. Now, by the way, the standard deduction is increasing for 23 to $27,700. Wow. So the standard deduction only goes up. It's just amazing. So 23 could be an exceptional year for taxes in terms of you paying less. Given that reality, how could you possibly think about paying more? Maybe it's a Roth conversion in 23.
Oh, there goes your accountant's phone.
Yep.
What were you thinking, Dennis?
Yeah, so ring, ring. It's important to think about. How do I think about not only the end of this year, making certain that I paid in enough, if at all possible, because the penalties are going up, they think, to 7%. So you want to make certain that you can avoid those penalties, but also think about how you might take advantage of better deductions. Because even the small donations, that deductions has gone away. For there's no $300 or $600 donation deduction for non-itemizers this year, so that went away. Now, one other last thing to think about. You may decide you wanted to use a donor-advised fund at some point in the future, so that if you haven't decided, okay, which groups do I want to give to? I am not sure. There are maybe three or four that I'd like to consider, but I want to get the deduction this year. That's where a donor advised fund could possibly come in, because you can gift the lump sum to that donor advised fund, get the full deduction this year, and then spread out the giving, if you will, for through next year, if you would like. And in essence, still give to those organizations, but if you haven't yet made that decision, this can be an easy way to still get the deduction for 2022.
It just ultimately has to go to the charities.
It does indeed. Mm-hmm. It goes there anyway as a result of you opening this donor advised fund. That is a guarantee that it will go to them. That's how you get the deduction up front. All right, Ron, did we have a question or a hand?
Someone here wants to know if you can explain self-employed health insurance deduction. If you're self-employed.
Yes.
Can you explain the health insurance deduction?
Part of it is deductible. The percentage escapes me. But
that's a tax attorney question.
You bet.
But John Sluice is going to be here
in January,
I believe. So we'll save that question for him.
He's probably buried now.
He is busy.
Yeah.
He's very busy indeed. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, so I'm not uncertain of what that percentage is, but a portion of your health insurance premiums are deductible as a self-employed individual. Yes. So, you can easily check that out online as well. Yeah. Now, Heidi,
yes.
We're talking about recessions.
Yes, a very happy topic, but a very pertinent topic because, you know, there's a lot of talk and we've had a very difficult market, very volatile this year. And so, you know, what is a recession and what causes it? And there is an article that was put out by Capital Group. It's called The Guide to Recessions. So I just thought I'd go over some of the highlights. So help people understand what's going on, and everybody throws out all these words and terms, and maybe help define some of those so that you can understand some of those more in-depth conversations. So a recession is commonly defined as at least two consecutive quarters of declining GDP or gross domestic product. And so recessions can occur for a lot of different reasons, but typically they're the result of some kind of economic imbalance. And this ultimately needs to be corrected in the market. So one of the ones that most people remember is the 2008-2009 recession, which was caused by excess debt in the housing market. And then there was another one way back in 2001, which was caused by an asset bubble in the technology stock. So a lot of people called it the dot-com bubble.
When was that?
That was back in 2001.
Yeah, okay.
And then most recently, we had extreme economic upheaval with some of the policies that we put through during the COVID-19 pandemic. And so we're not really sure how to interpret some of that data because it was so different from anything we've ever done before, right, Dennis? I mean,
yes.
We had never purposely shut down things at such an extensive level.
Right. And it was felt in the term of the declining stock market in March of 2020 mm-hmm. is when what we saw that February through March, the market was down about 30-35%, depending on which one we're talking about, in a period of six weeks. Yeah.
So it's a little different this time. When unemployment rises, consumers typically reduce their spending, which further pressures the economic growth and company earnings and stock prices. These factors can fuel a vicious cycle that can really impact an economy and people's daily lives. So although they say, here's their little caveat, although they can be painful to live through, recessions are necessary and a means of clearing out different imbalances in the economy, which can lead to periods of more productive growth.
Unfortunately, it's never fun getting that cleaned up.
Yes.
It's kind of like going to the, I shouldn't say this, but going to the dentist, you know, back in the day when you didn't have the painkillers.
Right.
Oh,
geez.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Right.
So another question, and we've talked about this a little bit on the show, is how long do these recessions last? Well, in their analysis here, they looked at 11 cycles since 1950, and they showed that recessions have persisted between 2 and 18 months, with the average spanning about 10 months. So not too long. But recessions are relatively small blips in economic history. And over the last 70 years, the U.S. has been in an official recession less than 15% of all months. So the average expansion period increased economic activity by almost 20%, whereas the average recession reduced GDP by 2.5%. So you can see that there's a wide difference there.
Yeah, it's significant. And it's almost as though any pain, I think many times we dread the thought of the pain. It's much worse, the thought of it and or the anticipation of it,
yeah,
than the reality. Now, no one likes to see excesses moved through the economy, but it's a natural part of going up and down. And it's interesting, you were referencing this in reminding clients yesterday, you said, with meetings of the losses that were taken, I think, in 2018.
Correct.
When the markets were down then. Mm-hmm. And many of us have forgotten that, oh, yes, this has happened before. And while sometimes it's more painful than others, we do get through it. We always do come out of a recession, even though we don't like the anticipation of it.
It seems like sometimes you have high unemployment rates,
yes,
with a recession.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Like right now we have inflation, we have high prices, so I don't know how the relation is there or if one causes the other, but you're looking at possible recession with inflation, right?
Right, and one of the unique things I think that we're in now, and you hear, I mean, when you listen to business news or something, you'll hear opinions on both sides about things, but really, COVID, when we shut it down and people lost their jobs because of shutting things down, and then as the economy opened back up, people going back to work, there's still some of that residual of a labor shortage.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we're experiencing some of these indicators of a recession. And so a lot of confusion comes into play. And part of that, it was how we reacted during the pandemic and the economic decisions that,
right,
were made.
The term for that is stagflation.
Stagflation.
Yeah.
Is a recession and inflation?
Yes.
Stagflation.
Right. Now, what the Fed is trying to do now is obviously calm down this inflation number. Well, the thinking is there's no way they're going to get to their goal of 2.5% of inflation. They may get to 4 to 5 because they're not going to be able to raise the rates enough to calm it down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll see whether or not that's the case. But some definite real indicators here that we are going to be going into a recession. Go ahead, Heidi, please.
Right. And so one of the key points talking about these recessions is some of the strongest stock rallies have occurred during the late stages of a recession. And this is something that we talk to our clients about, and that you may want to talk to your financial advisor about is, you know, do you stay invested or do you not? Well, you know, if those strongest days in the market come at the end of the recession, if you're not in the market, you're not experiencing that comeback. So it's just something to keep in mind when you're considering how you want to structure your portfolio in light of all these things.
Weathering the negativity, you know, you prepare your house for terrible weather, and preparing your portfolio can be somewhat similar to that, understanding that it is going to be impacted, but trying to guess when it's going to respond positively, as we've just seen in the month of October, not seen an October like that since 1976. No one thought that that was going to be happening. No one predicted it. So not it being out at that time could have resulted in a much greater loss than you would have otherwise experienced because you happened to get out at the wrong time and didn't get back in, as
yes.
another example.
It's very painful trying to time the market.
Yes.
All right, so let's look at four examples of economic indicators that can warn of a recession. And this includes the yield curve, the unemployment rate, consumer confidence, and housing starts. So the inverting the yield curve, you hear this on the radio and you're like, well, what's that? What does that mean? So what it means is that a 10-year yield is below the 2-year yield.
Isn't that fun? I mean, you know, everyone's holding their breath. What is it that simple? It simply means that if you were to buy a 10-year bond, a treasury bond right now, it would yield less than the 2-year bond. Well, why would I buy a 10-year bond? Lock it in for 10 years to get less. Because you're concerned about the economy and or you think that those interest rates are going to go down even further because of a recession.
So it's often a sign the Fed has hiked short-term rates too high, or investors are seeking long-term bonds over riskier assets.
Are we there now? The 10-year yield's lower than the 2-year?
We are indeed.
We are indeed. Okay.
History's being made right underneath my shoulders.
And then unemployment, another factor.
What did he say again? I don't know.
Yeah, what did he say?
Sorry, Heidi.
That's okay. another factor, unemployment rises through that cycle, through the recession cycle. When unemployment rises, it can lead to declining consumption and business output. People just don't have as much money. They don't have as much discretionary income. They're not buying stuff.
Right. I'm sorry. I'm showing Ron the inverted yield curve so we can see back through history.
It's a lovely graph, isn't
what
it?
What that means. You know,
it
what
is.
That looks like. See?
It goes up and down and then up and down.
Yes. You're right, Ron. Very good. So consumer confidence declining from the previous year. So if you see consumer confidence, and consumer confidence is when consumers are pessimistic, they often cut back on their spending. So again, that just goes towards people having less discretionary income to go and buy the things they want.
So that toboggan you thought you were going to get for Christmas, Ron, it's out this year.
Happen.
Sorry, not going to happen.
I'll make you one, Ron.
So another indicator is a housing starts declining at least 10% from the previous year. When the economic outlook is poor, home builders often cut back on housing projects.
All right, is that down now? Do you know housing starts?
Oh, yeah. Housing starts way down.
And actually, one thing that I have heard on the business news recently is that, you know, when people put the down payments down for a new house or a new build, they have a period of time to stop that process and say, okay, I don't want to do it. And that is going up. Mm. People are taking back their deposits and not going through with those contracts. Mm. So
lots of housing starts in Traverse City, though, just driving around over the last few weeks. There are apartment buildings and condos going up everywhere.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, I think my favorite quote, if I may, at the very beginning of this article is this. Recessions can be complicated, misunderstood, and downright scary. But most of all, they're hard to predict. As Paul Samuelson, the first American to win the Nobel Prize in Economics, wryly noted in the 1960s. So rather than predicting the exact date of the next recession, this guide will offer perspective. So what he said was, economists have predicted successfully 9 of the last 5 or 6 recessions. So they didn't know when it was going to be happening, and frankly, neither do we. But we have some significant indicators here,
and that's
but
why we're
we
talking
can't
about the index.
Say for sure.
That's right.
But there's a lot of focus on, is it a recession or is it not? Did it start yesterday or next week?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you ease into it, though. All these indicators develop, so I think if there's pain or whatever the impact of the recession is, it's not felt on the day that it officially starts.
No.
No.
Correct. And or the market always responds when it thinks, or those who are involved with the market thinks we're going to be coming out of it. Just as what's happened in October again. They thought we might be moving out of this with the Fed might not be raising rates quite to the degree that they were considering they might. So it's very difficult to predict for a lot of, and even though we weren't officially in a recession at that point, although some people argue that point too.
So is it a blip, a bubble, or a recovery?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
It's a flying saucer.
We had one, I guess, a comment, though. This goes back to talking about tax preparation or tax Somebody said, I like the QBI 20% pass-through deduction thanks to DT Donald Trump in 2017. What's the QBI? Do you know what that is?
Yeah, it's the it's a qualified business situation where you're able to take a significant portion of your business revenue and get a significant tax break for that revenue internally. So it's a very positive development for those who are in business and taking the risk of being in business. So in essence, it avoids some of the tax that would have otherwise been imposed. Okay?
Got
QBI,
it.
QBI.
Okay, we have one more indicator that we didn't get to.
Oh.
That's the leading economic index, or the LEI. If it's declining at least 1% from the previous year, this provides a broader look at the economy through an aggregation of multiple leading economic indicators. So this is a special index that you can look at that gives a general idea of how the economy is doing. So if you see a decline of 1%, that's another indicator that may mean that a recession is imminent.
Well, fantastic. Now, that's a great article. Thanks to Capital Group for putting that information together. They've given us more than once this year. Fantastic. Sorry, this poor grammar. But more than once this year, they've given us great information that we can disseminate to you all out there. And we certainly appreciate them for assimilating all this. All right. I think we're at a break. Are we not, Ron?
We are. And I will play one of your requested songs.
Beautiful. Let's do that, shall we?
But the story, the reason is Celine Dion, maybe people saw on the news today, she made an Instagram post and said that she's been diagnosed with stiff person syndrome, which is a rare and incurable neurological disease that can cause debilitating muscle spasms. I've never heard of that.
That's
so
terrible.
Sad. And she's trying to work through this. She's canceling the Europe part of her tour because of it and trying to recover or recuperate to the extent that she's able. So this Ave Maria, a particular favorite because she actually sings it in English.
Ooh, in English. All right. We'll be right back with Prout Financial Design New Retirement Radio on WTCM.
Hit 20 million job losses. Now steady recovery. Now...
Holiday season has arrived, and with it, celebrations of many kinds. At Comfort Keepers, we know that holiday gatherings give us a wonderful opportunity to spend time with the seniors in our lives. Are your older friends and relatives comfortable, secure, happy? This can be a stressful time for seniors who are coping with the challenges that come with growing older. Now is a great time to focus on bringing joyful moments to every day. Comfort Keepers can help, so please call or visit us online at comfortkeepers.com. We're wishing each of you a joyful holiday season.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-590-7516. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you, even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Providers help thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance to buy $1 million of affordable term life for you. All you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-590-7516. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-590-7516. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds, too. Call 800-590-7516. 800-590-7516.
You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
I'm Deanne Jennings, and I'm here to share data and dive into the world of finance with you.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580. Prout Financial Design in Traverse City is in. Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright, Deanne Jennings are all here around the table.
It's great to be here. Thank you, Ron. Again on Thursday. About 10 before the hour or so. And we have a question on the text line that was really interesting. Where is that? Uh-oh.
Somebody
says, I'm trying to consolidate investments and work towards retirement stuff. He says, thoughts about a competitor. unfortunately, your office is further away than I would prefer, and I recognize that. And what's interesting is this very competitor, we spoke with a gentleman who's retired from that firm and his relatives yesterday. He was in with them. The timing couldn't be better on this question. Thank you so much. So what he said, and I liked it very much. I thought it made sense. He said to his relatives who have been with us for some time as clients, so they were, I don't want to get into the details of that, give anything away. But anyway, what he said was he asked them, well, do you like Dennis? Yes or no? Mm-hmm. If you do, then given your experience with him, and it goes way back with their parents and so forth, listening to the radio show over the years, if you do, then go with him. You know, just make that decision. So a big part of it is, do you feel you can get along with them personally? That is a big part of the communication. It is a very close, important relationship. It can't be understated or overstated. So go with someone that you like, vet them perhaps with an accountant, an attorney within the community. There are all kinds of ways that you can ask around about professionals in that field to help yourself perhaps gain confidence in that situation. And that makes me think we ought to be discussing this next year, Heidi. I'm looking at you so people can see. Looking at you there, Heidi.
All right, I'm ready to write it down.
Yeah, there you go. Let's talk about the questions to ask a financial advisor from Ed Slott and Company. And there's several others we have, too, that can help you arm yourself. Because the importance of having a good financial advisor, it only increases with time. The complexity the situations do not get simpler out there. We just have never seen that. And given that reality, the markets, the economy, taxes, all the rest, many of you will want to seek out help to get a darn good financial advisor for our future, okay?
Maybe you need a Prout annex somewhere.
You know, We're working on it.
We just moved
Funny
in.
You should say
we
that.
We just moved into our new offices.
Not yet. Yes. Yeah. We're oh my gosh. We're loving the new space on 8th Street there, 1105 East 8th. For those who want to know the address, and man, the lobby is just we've got more space, so we're enjoying that very much. You
yes,
bet.
Indeed.
Yes. All right, Deanne, we have the stats if you would.
All right. A correction is defined as a stock market decline greater than 10% but less than 20%. In the 75-plus years from 1946 through June 13, 2022, the S&P 500 index has had 30 declines of between 10% and 20%. These corrections have occurred on an average once every 2.5 years, and that's MFS by the numbers. So you're saying that the market declines quite often, or should I say quite often?
Yes, it sure
it
can.
It happens.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We just forget.
The ups and downs. It's never straight up, is it? With any price of any commodity. Mm. Isn't that the case? Isn't that interesting? Of course. You know, it could be homes. Mm-hmm. It could be mortgages. The price of mortgages just went up by double. Mm. All right?
Interesting.
The price of things change with time.
Speaking of mortgages and homes, and we were talking about that being a sign, this year the share of the first-time home buyers reached a record low, and the age of typical first-time buyer reached an all-time high.
Hmm.
Only 26% of all buyers this year were first-time buyers, down from last year's 34% and 2010's peak of 50% during the first-time home buyer tax credit. The typical first-time home buyer was 36 years old, up from last year's 33 years. The typical repeat buyer's age rose to 59 years, up from 56 years in 2021. Both years are the highest repeat buyer's ages in history.
Crazy?
Isn't it? The median expected home tenure for first-time buyers was 18 years, up from 10 years in 2021. This is also the highest ever recorded. And
okay, hang on. Sorry. Sorry, I got to interrupt that.
There.
You used tenure and 10 years. So that was confusing to listen to.
Yes.
Tenure is how long they've owned the home, obviously.
Yes, the median expected home tenure for first-time buyers was 18 years, up from 10 years in 2021.
Thank you. Wow.
I was surprised how the age on the first-time home buyer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean that it's going
36,
up so
was
much.
It?
Yes.
Yeah.
36. It was 33. Now it's 36. Do we have time for more?
We can do one or two more.
Okay. Over one-third of U.S. households have IRAs, and over 80% of households with IRAs also have employer-sponsored plans. Only 13% of households made an IRA contribution in tax year 2020, and that's the ICI research report.
So we were talking with friends. We had some friends Jill and I did over for Sunday night. And she's relatively young, works at a local place, and she said she's putting in $50 every week to her IRA, in essence, through her company. And I thought, I don't know what age she is, maybe 30, but incredible.
That's great.
Those simple things that you can do to save for yourself. Mm-hmm. You really have to pull that responsibility back to yourself these days, all right?
Yep.
By the way, our last text of the program, somebody was they're driving while listening to New RR, New Retirement Radio.
Yeah.
They're thinking about the inverted yield curve applied to driving would be an upside-down yield sign followed by an S-curve sign.
There you go.
Inverted yield curve ahead.
Mathematique
it's
already.
It's like driving on ice.
Right.
That is very creative.
Yeah, love it. Thank you.
Well, that'll wrap up the day today.
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah.
And thank
Prout.
You to our listeners. We really appreciate it.
Dennis Prout, Heidi Cartwright.
Thanks, Ron.
And Deanne Jennings.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Deanne. Thank you all.